fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm happy to be here with you on this Friday ahead of a busy sports weekend around the world. Let's see, we've got the Masters Golf Tournament going on in the southern U.S. state of Georgia. We'll check in on how fan favorites Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are doing, along with checking the leaderboard for some of the young players vying for this year's title. We also have the first day of the National Basketball Association playoffs coming up on Saturday. And get this. No LeBron James. For the first time since his second season in Cleveland, way back in 2005. I'm also anticipating the big Boston Marathon coming up in the northeastern U.S. state of Massachusetts on Monday. If you remember, last year was one of the most surprising marathons in recent history, as a Japanese man and an American woman took home the titles on a frigid, rainy day. This year, the weather is expected to be slightly better, with temperatures around 15 degrees Celsius, but there is a chance of rain during the race. But first, we're joined by our friend Samson O'Malley, who has a report on what to look for ahead of the big draw affecting 24 teams in the African Cup of Nations, and some more soccer news to get us into the weekend. Welcome, Samson.
The 24 teams who have qualified for this year's African Cup of Nations and who are bracing themselves up for the draws, which will indicate the groups they will be competing in and which sides they will be up against. The heads of federations as well as the national team coaches are already in Cairo for tonight's draw as the Confederation of African Football begins the 100 days countdown for the June 21st to July 19th tournament. The 24 teams are divided according to the latest FIFA rankings, while the results at the previous three African tournaments in 2013, 2015 and 2017, as well as the results of the past three African qualification campaigns, will be taken into consideration. Jero Udo and Andrew Randa are sports journalists.
The fact is that every of the team that's supposed to be in the Nations Cup is there except Zambia. Every of the team, name them Senegal, DR Congo, Ghana, all the big teams are there because of the expansion of the Nations Cup. So the Nations Cup is going to be very, very interesting. The first time we're having 24 team format, and we're going to have the round of 16 for the first time in the Nations Cup. So that tells you that it's going to be a very, very exciting and interesting competition.
What I do know is Nigeria is going to face a very tough team, a top team, and then maybe two of the minnows, like the other guys, the Burundi and Mauritania, that have qualified. And after I did my simulation, more or less, I found out that give or take, it would be an easy passage for Nigeria to the quarterfinal.
Away from the CAF AFCON draws to the CAF Champions League, as Al-Holly manager Martin Lazzati has announced a 21-man squad ahead of their clash against Mamelodi Sundowns in the CAF Champions League quarterfinal second leg. Sundowns had trashed Al-Holly 5-0 last weekend at home, and the Reds will be hoping for a miracle in the second leg to compensate the first result on Saturday. In other games this weekend, Esperance de Tunis will be confident of sealing a place in the final four of the CAF Champions League when they host CS Constantine. Simba SC will be out to cause a major upset when they lock horns with TP Mazembe, while in Omdurman, Etoile du Sahel will look to avoid an upset against Al Hilal, while Casablanca will look to make the most of the home advantage when they host Horoya AC. The team's first leg meeting at the Stade du 28 September in Conakry ended in a goalless stalemate. And now to South Africa, where English Premiership side Arsenal have been in South Africa for a three-day coaching clinic for coaches in Cape Town and South Africa, known as Coaches to Count, a social awareness campaign. Simon McManus is Arsenal Academy coach and is the lead facilitator for the coaching clinic.
Sorry, we're not telling them the style we want them to coach. We're trying to get them to understand the different principles behind the way we try to create holistic players at Arsenal.
I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. We look forward to hearing more from you on Monday, where I'm sure you'll get us up to date on some of the key combinations for the tournament coming up in June. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Monday, we'll have the results of the Boston Marathon. The professional runners should be crossing the finish line just as our show is going on the air. As I mentioned earlier, the weather last year helped two runners, American woman Des Linden and Japanese man Yuki Kawauchi, to surprise victories. This year, while the weather won't be quite as cold as it was close to freezing in 2018, there is the potential of rain. Now, history is not in Linden's favor for Monday, as a woman has not officially repeated as the marathon champion in over a decade. The last runner to do the double was Catherine Ndereba of Kenya, who did it in 2004 and 2005. Linden, to her credit, is running well in the year since her breakthrough win in Boston. Another American contender is Jordan Hesse, who missed last year's race with an injury she suffered late in the spring. Of course, there are four East African runners who should do well on Monday: Werknesh Degefa and Mare Dibaba of Ethiopia, and Kenyans Betsy Saina and Edna Kiplagat. Degefa is the runner in the women's field with the best personal marathon time, running 2 hours, 17 minutes, and 41 seconds in Dubai earlier this year. Dibaba has experience in Boston in 2014 and 2015 before winning a bronze medal at the Olympics in 2016. While she chose to run in London the last 2 years, her experience with the hills in Boston may prove useful. To get us into that running spirit, let's join our friend Andy Edwards, who recently spoke with Nancy Kiprop of Kenya after her marathon win in Vienna.
We've been privileged at the Vienna City Marathon today to see some tremendous running from Nancy Kiprop of Kenya. Vienna knows all about Nancy, and today she completed an historic achievement, well, two in fact. Firstly, she became the first woman to win 3 Vienna titles, but she smashed the course record and her personal best to run 2 hours, 22 minutes and 12 seconds, taking, well, a minute and a half off the old course record. Nancy, you looked in tremendous shape in the first half. You looked as if you'd break 2:20 for the marathon. Did you really feel so good on the start line?
Yeah, I felt so good. I had planned for it. I had planned to cross the first half with 70, and it really went a bit faster because I knew that the last course will be a bit tougher. So I wanted to run faster this one, and then I compensated that towards the end.
You were using the experience you've had from two previous wins in Vienna. You knew what the course was like and what the weather conditions could be?
Yeah, it was of advantage to me because I knew the course very well, and I knew that towards the 30 kilometer to around 35 kilometers was really a tough course. So this is where I really struggled. There was a little bit of wind, but I really managed because I knew the course and the people were there cheering for me. Others having posters written my name. I was so excited.
You looked so strong when you were running at 2:19 pace. Do you think that one day you could run a whole marathon at 2:19? It looks as if you've got that ability.
Yeah, I'm confident that with more trial, I will make it to even 2:20 pace, to 2:19 pace.
Everybody in Vienna and in the running world knows about your school at home in Cesarek near Eten. Of course, the prize money and the bonus for the course record would be very helpful. Do you have plans to further develop the school back home?
Sure, I have many plans. I have many projects ahead of me. Many buildings to be constructed, many people to be employed, many teachers to be employed, and really it's a fantastic day for me.
How do you go about recovery? When you go back home to Kenya, do you take it easy for a couple of weeks?
Sure, I will have around 6 weeks of relaxing and recovery before resuming back to my normal training.
Well, you've already won 3 Vienna City Marathon titles. I have a hunch you might like to come back and make it for you. You seem to have a special rapport for this city, a special love for it, and they have for you.
I will be happy to come back to Vienna. I can see that I'm attached to Vienna. I'm being loved by Vienna people, and they really love my project. I have fans in Vienna, and Vienna is like home for me.
Nancy Kiprop, many congratulations for the Vienna City Marathon. Thank you, Nancy.
Welcome.
That's Andy Edwards talking with Nancy Kiprop, the recent winner of the Vienna City Marathon in Austria. Of course, she won't be able to make it to Boston because the turnaround is too fast. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're looking ahead on this Friday show to one of the marquee events of the sporting calendar here in the United States, the Boston Marathon. We already looked at the women's field, now on the men's side. Last year's champ, Japanese runner Yuki Kawauchi, already has 3 marathons under his belt this year. He ran 12 in 2018. After his win in Boston, Kawauchi is now a full-time professional runner, giving up his job in Japan to focus on marathon training. Now, East African runners should prove to be strong competition for Kawauchi if he intends to repeat as the champion. Lelisa Desisa, the New York Marathon champion, is in Boston. He's from Ethiopia. His countryman, Lemmy Berhanu Haile, was the 2016 Boston champ, but he didn't finish the race the 2 subsequent years. The Kenyans who look to have the best chance to win this year are Lawrence Chirono, who has the best personal time in the field, and Jeffrey Kirui, last year's second-place finisher, who lost his edge late in the race and was passed by Kawauchi. We'll have the results for you on Monday's show. We'll move on now to a story by our VOA colleagues Faiza Almasri and Amy Katz about a tennis program for children in Washington, D.C. But first, this programming note.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Thanks, Peter. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Let's have a listen now to this VOA feature about a tennis program here in Washington, D.C., designed to help children who might not normally be exposed to this sport get a handle on the game. My colleagues Faiza Almasri and Amy Katz have the story.
After long hours at school, it's time for some fun. Andrea Nicholson, who comes almost every day, likes playing tennis.
Something that I like most about tennis is the game. Just really gets my attention in anything that I do. Just brings up the fire in me.
And backhand cross court.
Audra Bell helps bring out the best in children through her work with the Washington Tennis and Education Foundation.
A lot of times we go get them from school and bring them here. They do half their time doing homework, and they spend time with tutors. We have a robotics program, a girls group.
The kids spend the rest of their time on the tennis court.
The kids are transformed whenever they commit and they learn discipline and they learn mental toughness and all of the things that tennis teaches you as a whole. It's really amazing to see.
You're on the court, you're playing singles, you're by yourself, you're relying on yourself. That is absolutely the exact same stamina and kind of resilience that our kids need in the classroom. We use it as the hook. They love it. They come every day and they play tennis. But we also expect them to excel academically. We also have 2 pros here that grew up in the program and now they work here full time as tennis coaches.
Beautiful.
Tennis director Mike Ragland is one of those pros. He says joining the program at 13 changed his life.
I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing. Got myself in a lot of trouble. When I started playing tennis, it gave me a different path to life.
Dante, watch that ball.
Because of tennis, Ragland went to college on a full scholarship and started a career as a tennis coach.
When they called and said that they was building this facility, they wanted someone to come back that came up through the program. I wanted to get back. We take the kids in. We talk to the kids about life, how to carry themselves, how to behave, and give them a structure, something that they can go forward with.
Oh, yeah.
It teaches you not to give up, and it teaches you just to kind of push through life. Everyone here is doing very well in school, and that's just all thanks to the tutors and the teachers that we have here.
Looking good.
Coaches here say just a few go on to become tennis pros, but others do very well and receive full scholarships, while the rest get a solid foundation to help them succeed in life. For writer Faiza El-Masri, Amy Katz, VOA News.
Thanks for that story, Faiza and Amy. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Quick international sports note. I just saw a story about the National Football League, the American Football League here in the United States, and its program to integrate international athletes into its player field. The program is called the International Player Pathway. One of the new international players getting a chance to show his stuff for an NFL team this spring got a phone call from the Buffalo Bills, a team in New York State.
Being with the Buffalo Bills, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. I wanted to let you know that as of now, you're officially a Buffalo Bill. How's that sound?
It's crazy, man. It sounds crazy.
That's English rugby player Christian Wade, a 27-year-old being welcomed to the Buffalo Bills. Wade is projected as a running back and kick returner and has plenty of experience finding the equivalent of the NFL end zone. He's scored 82 tries in his professional rugby career and could be a good fit for a team that once supported running back O.J. Simpson. The remaining three players invited to join NFL teams are Australian rugby player Valentine Holmes, who is now a member of the New York Jets, Jacob Johnson of Germany, another projected running back who'll be joining the defending Super Bowl champions, the New England Patriots, and Durval Neto of Brazil, a judo champion who's played American football in his home country. He's projected as a defensive lineman with the Miami Dolphins. Now, I promised you an update on the Masters, and here's a report from Thursday's action, where two young golfers saw their names atop the leaderboard.
U.S. Open and PGA champion Brooks Koepka shares the Masters' first-round lead with Bryson DeChambeau. They are at 6-under after 66s. DeChambeau birding his last four holes to join that lead.
It was obviously my best round out here, 66. I was just looking to shoot something in the 60s this week because I haven't done that yet in my couple times playing here. But what a magical back nine.
They are one shot clear of 48-year-old Phil Mickelson and two ahead of Ian Poulter and Dustin Johnson. Former champion Adam Scott is among those at 3-under, and Tiger Woods is not out of it at 2-under the card after an opening round of 70. Rory McIlroy, however, struggled for a 1-over 73. Graham Agars, Augusta.
Now looking at the live leaderboard from Augusta's second round, Bryson DeChambeau maintains his lead. He's through seven holes today, 6-under par overall, one stroke ahead of Phil Mickelson, who's one hole behind at 5-under for the tournament. Tiger Woods tees off about an hour from now. We'll let you know how all these golfers did on Monday's show. Joining us now with a story about a milestone event coming up in the world of Formula One this weekend in Shanghai, China, is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. Sunday's race will be the 1,000th Grand Prix in 70 years of F1 racing. And as the drivers prepare to start their engines, reigning world champion Lewis Hamilton says he's preparing for Sunday's historic race the same way as any other.
Well, it's not really any different to any other race for me. We're here to do a job, and of course it's a milestone for the sport.
Hamilton has had more success than anyone in the history of this event. He aims to win his 6th China Grand Prix title. However, teammate Valtteri Bottas of Finland currently leads Hamilton by a point. Following a Friday practice session, both Hamilton and Bottas are said to be one of the strongest driving duos in the sport. The first ever Formula One race was held in 1946, and since then, fans have swarmed the edges of racetracks to take in the rush of speed, power, and a whole lot of noise. But the F1 engine roar has been a bit muted since the olden days of Formula One racing. Prior to 2014, drivers revved up big, noisy V8, V10, and V12 engines. But 5 years ago, turbo hybrid V6 engines came along, and research shows the fans haven't been too happy about the sport going green. Former Formula One chief executive Bernie Ecclestone was one of them. He once said the current engines are too quiet. But Ecclestone has since had a change of heart. He now envisions a quieter F1 event, and he says the future of Formula One racing is electric.
I think what we've got to do is either embrace it or get rid of it, because I think manufacturers generally are all moving that way for electric cars, and it would be obvious then, why not have electric car racing?
The British magnate dubbed Mr. Formula One transformed the sport into a billion-dollar business. However, he says he has no plans to attend F1's historic race, but the memory of being present at the British Grand Prix in 1950 is still fresh.
I was running a Formula 3 car there. So for me, it was different. I was the boy just racing, and, you know, Stirling was there and people like that. Harry Show. So it was all different. And then there was the proper racers.
And speaking of proper racers, Ecclestone spoke about Lewis Hamilton and says he's on the right track to beat Michael Schumacher's record of 7 world titles.
He needs to win another couple of races, the championships. Well, if he keeps driving, there's no reason why he shouldn't.
Well, we will see if Lewis Hamilton outperforms the pack on Sunday. As far as the future of F1 engines, Formula One will soon need to make a decision on the kind of engine they'll use starting in 2021. Some are calling for a return to simpler and cheaper engines that feature that familiar roar, while others are looking toward quieter, fuel-efficient technology. And then, of course, there's the audience to consider. Last month, motorsport executive Jean Todt said, going forward, Formula One wants to amplify the sounds of the sport because they are viscerally moving to fans and critically important. Well, there is one idea that has been presented as a possible solution, attaching microphones to the car's exhaust system to give it some extra oomph. And that does it for me today. And for the week, I'll hand it back over to you, Dan. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen, and thank you for helping me end the week with a little bit of extra oomph. We'll have the race results for you on Monday. We'll also have some talk about the first weekend of the NBA playoffs. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Milwaukee Bucks will do with their emerging star of Nigerian heritage, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and of course whether Philadelphia can get deep into the tournament, potentially without Cameroonian star Joel Embiid, who looks like he'll miss at least game one of the first round due to a knee injury. And will the Toronto Raptors, shaped by Masai Ujiri of Nigeria, finally make it to their first NBA Finals without LeBron James in their way? We'll get the answers on Monday. And that wraps up the April 12th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger and VOA engineer Nick Ivanov. and thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is Science in a Minute.
Do you think eating food or drinking beverages with a lot of sugar or other simple carbohydrates will provide you with a quick burst of energy, some call a sugar rush? A number of people around the world have long linked sugar with delivering an instant surge of hyperactivity. But according to a new study published in Neuroscience and Biobehavioral Reviews, this is just a myth. The study suggests sugar doesn't cause the so-called sugar rush, and it virtually has no effect on your mood, regardless of how much sugar you ingest. The British and German study authors say they have actually found the opposite to be true, that sugar increases tiredness and decreases alertness within an hour after it is consumed. The researchers made their findings after analyzing data gathered from 31 previously conducted studies. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is